Danilana Kitchen talks about food. Danilana Kitchen talks recipes. Danilana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Danilana Kitchen. This is Community Radio. You're listening to us from the station KHOI in beautiful downtown Ames. We get together and talk about food. My name is Lana Nakio.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
And we get by with a little help from our friends.
Support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames. Community-owned and community-focused since 1974. Open daily, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op.
And we do. On the Donalana Kitchen, we talk about food, farming, advice, opinions, recipes, and lots of other things, too. Yes, we do. This last weekend, I've kind of been keeping track of full moons, and Saturday was the most beautiful full moon.
Yeah,
and
it's been kind of gorgeous.
Kind of gorgeous, and nothing's better than, you know, taking a beverage of sorts and celebrating the full moon out on the lawn chair. Just kind of watch it come up. There was the, I don't know what you call that, the confluence or the addition of the planet Mars was kind of right next to the full moon this time, too. So I don't know what that portends.
Boy, you must be a good astronomer. Those things escaped me.
Well, you look up there, and it's sort of reddish, and I can kind of pretend that, I know what's going on.
Well, I just thought it was lovely.
It was lovely. It was lovely. It's time to celebrate that sort of thing. I know there is maybe a lot of people gather for that. I know there was another meeting of the Lunar Society. There's a group here in Central Iowa that gets together and for the only purpose of celebrating the full moon and having a potluck.
Our very own lunatics.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I didn't want to say that. That's why you're here. Thank you, Donna. But I did not go to the Lunar Society meeting or this potluck. I went to something else. The English Country Dance Group had a full moon English Country Dance, and we danced a lot of things that had moon or evening or whatever in it. And it was a fine evening, too. Nice thing to do.
English Country Dance Society?
English Country Dance, yeah, society.
Something.
Yeah.
Is different from the Central Iowa barn dance.
Yes, it is. English country dancing is kind of like the precursor of contra dancing is more American, up-to-date, kind of the modern version. English country kind of goes with the golden oldies, starting in the 1600s, 1700s. A lot of older stuff, English. A little bit more elegant.
More sedate?
Yes. Think of Jane Austen.
Okay.
Yes. Although, you know, we're there in our T-shirts and running shoes. But we are trying to be graceful. And it's nice to get together and be graceful every now and
then. Yes, we should all practice being graceful in every aspect of our being. I applaud that. So.
Anyway, good way to handle a full moon coming through. I have a little something from the Donalana Kitchen News Desk. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-tick. That's a ticker tape. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick. Here's the News Desk item for this week. ISU students create new food item named Top 3 Finalist in a national competition from the Ames Tribune. I'm getting this information. 8 ISU students kind of spent their time creating a new something to eat. They call it Beyond the Bar. It is a frozen yogurt snack. And it has been named as a finalist in the 2016 National Dairy Council New Product Competition. So that's good.
Well, bravo for them.
Yes, and get this. The requirements were that it had to contain at least 51% dairy. Ah, that's good. And it looks, it kind of looks like a Rice Krispie bar cut apart.
But did you say it had a flavor?
Yes.
Some sort of interesting flavor.
Oh, yes. Green tea. Where was it? Green tea and all kinds of good stuff in. And with a swirl of chocolate.
Okay.
Vanilla matcha green tea flavored frozen Greek yogurt
now,
with a chocolate swirl.
That sounds like it's supposed to be healthy.
Yeah. Sandwiched between two, count them, oat blend honey granola wafers. So that's what they came up with, and somebody liked it. So
what do you think? And it seems from the article that one of the main creators was a chemical engineering student.
Donna is snarling. I'm very skeptical
about engineers creating my food, and I do know that the ISU sort of nutrition department is actually geared towards teaching students to formulate more processed food. Oh, boy. Just what we need on the planet.
Formulate. Yeah. Well, there's formulating and there's cooking. I think it's coming at it from two different ways, and maybe the idea is different, too.
Lana's being very generous here.
Well, no. Mm-hmm. Are you producing something good to eat, or are you producing something good to sell?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Something good to sell. Yes, that would be the, oh boy, pardon my skepticism. By the way, did you know that Michelle Obama finally has gotten through Congress, I believe, a new nutrition label? Which has to list, get this is good, added sugars.
Oh.
Yes, now I believe that like this bar that we're just talking about will probably have to have the new label on it. So it did say it has 51% dairy products, but it did not say how much sugar was in it. And that is something we all need to be watching. Yes, we need our dairy products, but we need to be careful of the sugars. So henceforth, nutrition labels will have to declare added sugars. Of course, companies have 2 years to comply with getting this in order, but it's a step in the right direction.
And we can read labels, we can learn, and we can take responsibility for our own health.
Yes, do check the nutrition panel of anything that you buy and the ingredients list. It's all there. Except for whether it's genetically modified, but we're getting there.
So a new invention beyond the bar.
Yes.
A frozen
just
yogurt
what we need, more processed
sandwich.
Food. Oh boy.
There you go. Oh, Donna, you had a road trip this weekend.
I did.
Tell us about your road trip.
I did indeed. I went to Jewell, and I think I drove past that sheep farm that you were mentioning. Wasn't that sheep farm that you and Joe went to about a year ago on a field trip?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Looks very interesting.
The deals.
We might have to visit that one again.
That is it. That's
but
more, that's
I
up
did
there
go
the
up to Cecilia's table. And Cecilia is a young woman, a Mexican young woman who cooks very well. But she also has the idea that it's important. She says a lot of people ask her what Mexican food is really like, so she has a little cultural mission of introducing people to real family Mexican food. So we had a dinner that was delicious, and we have a little audio tape from that visit. So let's
go to Jewell and find out what's happening in Jewell.
We are up in Jewell. I'm with Cornelia Flora, who's a distinguished professor emeritus of rural sociology at ISU, and we're going rural tonight, and Neil has brought us up here to a lovely event. Neil, would you please tell us about it and make another introduction?
Well, we are at Cecilia's table and the house of Cecilia, and we are eating incredibly authentic Mexican food, both from her part of Mexico, Morelia, and from Oaxaca and Morelos, and also her husband is from Oaxaca, so we are sharing that. Cecilia has a really interesting background, which she comes from a farming family, but also a city family, who have had gastronomic adventures. They were spent years as vegetarians, but also she learned to love and appreciate authentic Mexican food.
Her mother's Mexican food.
And this is what we have been blessed with this evening, this fabulous meal, but also understanding where it fits in this amazing history of Mexico, the variety of food there, and the traditions from which our wonderful meal came.
So Cecilia she really wants to introduce us in Central Iowa to some authentic Mexican food. So
yes. This
is a little dinner at her house, and at some point she'll give out her email, because if you would like to come, you're going to do Cecilia's Table once a month, right?
Yeah, definitely.
For a small donation, and it is, let me say, it's delicious. So Cecilia, tell us about how you decided to do this, and then tell us about the menu tonight.
Okay. How I decided to do this, it was because very often I was asked about where the people can find good Mexican food. And for me...
In Central Iowa.
In Central Iowa, yes. And for me, it was really hard to say a place, to name a place where I can recommend them. And also, I have been hosting some dinners with my friends, my close friends, and they...
And everybody loved it, right?
Yes, exactly. And so... Well, I'd say, why not?
The girl can cook.
Yes, exactly. So I said...
Mucho gusto?
Mucho gusto.
Is that how you say?
No, buen gusto.
Buen gusto.
Yeah.
Okay, buen gusto.
Yes. they have buen gusto, yes. I thought, well, why I don't try to invite people who would like to try authentic or the most authentic of Mexican food they can find here in Central Iowa to my
house.
That's
because you're a real Mexican.
Yes, I am from Mexico. And I think I know a little bit about Mexican cuisine. So, yeah, I realized that it was a good idea to invite people that are over and they can enjoy real Mexican food.
So tell us what you made tonight.
Tonight, I cook soup, potato soup, or sopa de papa. The sopa de papa is a very light soup.
Yeah, very light broth with leeks, a lot of celery, and then potatoes in it. It was
yes.
a very nice beginning.
Yeah, and then I...
Now, you notice it's... Most Americans think Mexican food is very spicy. This is not...
I don't know.
A region of the country that has a lot of chili pepper in it.
No, definitely not, because I think this is something that is wrong. I mean, Mexican food is not all the time spicy. The good thing about, what I think is good about the Mexican food, the real Mexican food, is you can choose how much spiciness you want to put in your dishes.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you are not obligated to use all the time chili. It's just because you like.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like it, that's fine. Yeah, I'm not very good for very spicy food, so I don't like to eat also very... But I don't like to suffer when I am eating. It's what always say to my mom, because she likes spicy, very spicy food. So I said, Mom, I don't like to suffer when I'm eating. So now she tries to don't use too much spice in the food. Well, the next dish I cook was a mole verde, green mole.
Green mole. This was the main course?
Yeah, it was the main course. It was made with green tomatillos, chili peppers.
Tomatillos.
Green chili peppers.
Green chili peppers. But it wasn't hot.
No, it wasn't.
And what was the seed in it?
Pumpkin seeds.
Pumpkin seeds.
Yeah.
So, do you toast them and then pound them? How do you...
Yeah.
Did you actually pound them, or did you use a Cuisinart?
No. It's my right hand. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
So
the real thing. Oh, wow.
Mortar and pestle.
Yeah, and what's that? What's the mortar and pestle called in Spanish?
Molcajete.
Molcajete. Okay. So it was a roast lamb, right?
Yes.
With the green mole on it. And rice with peas in it.
Exactly. We use also rice. I mean, a lot of rice in Mexican food. And I side this dish with some rice, which I felt that if you don't like a lot of spiciness, because I didn't know how much spiciness you like in the food, will be a good way to low the spiciness.
Well, I think the mole was very gentle, and it was beautiful and light and... not oily like sometimes mole can be. It was just delicious. I'm stuffed.
Yeah.
Then tell us about the dessert.
Okay.
This is worth driving to Jewel for, folks. So.
Well, this is pastel de tres leches, so three milks cake.
Three milks cake, okay. Exactly. Tres leches.
And it's very also traditional, popular.
It's a lovely cake, and the three milks were, what did you say? Condensed milk, regular milk, and then probably the whipped cream on the top?
Evaporated
milk. Okay. Yes. It was delicious. Mm-hmm. Oh, and with it, you also served horchata.
Horchata sub-drink.
It's a beverage, yeah.
It's a beverage.
But you can make it with various grains. And often when you go to a Mexican restaurant, it will be made with rice.
Rice is common.
But this is made with oats.
Yeah, exactly.
How did you do? You soaked rolled oats?
Yes, I just, trying to take everything from the oats. And then.
So you put the water on the oats for how long?
It can be 2 hours or something like that. Not
Was
not,
it a rolled oat or a whole oat?
Normal, yeah.
Like an oatmeal?
It can be any kind of oats. It can be whole, or it can be a little. There are some that there is not really whole, just like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so you can do that. And the canela,
cinnamon, canela, yeah.
And I use also vanilla, Mexican.
Oh, and sugar, of course.
Sugar, of course. Yeah. Yes, the sugar.
Well, your horchata was very nice.
She used a special kind of stick cinnamon that made it particularly delicious.
Did you boil that in the milk?
No, it's not boiled. It's just
how do you infuse the cinnamon?
It's like grounded.
So then you just strain it all off.
Yeah,
but she ground it herself.
Uh huh.
From the stick.
Uh huh.
And it's incorporated with everything. So, and you have to use the. No, la coladera.
Strainer. Yes, the colander and the strainer.
Yeah, just to take everything from it. Yeah.
Well, it was a really, really delicious meal, and we've had some lovely conversations about Mexican culture and where the foods come from and all of those kinds of issues. Nothing terribly political. It's just all been about food.
This is all what I want to talk about.
So, Cecilia, tell us your full name, Cecilia.
Cecilia Cabrera Hernandez.
Cabrera Hernandez. Okay, so if someone wanted to be invited to one of your dinners, how would they get in touch with you?
By my email address.
Which is?
Cecilia,
C-E-C-I-L-I-A dot.
Cabrera.
C-A-B-R-E-R-A. C-A-B.
C-A-B-R-E-R-A.
Okay.
I can repeat it again.
Yes. So, okay, try it again.
Cecilia.Cabrera, H-D-Z.
H-D-Z. Okay. at gmail.com.
Exactly.
Okay. So this is if you want to have, in Jewel, Iowa, a really authentic Mexican food.
Yes,
Cecilia is planning to invite people once a month to her table for this, but this is her her way to introduce us to Mexican culture, and it's a very lovely way. Thank you so much. Okay, that was Cecilia Cabrera Hernandez up in Jewel, Iowa, at Cecilia's table. A couple of things we didn't mention, and I have to tell you, Lana, the cake was really good. I've had tres leches cakes before, and often, especially if they're commercially produced, they are super, super sweet. Ah. Hers was perfect. It was light, sort of, for a tres leches, but it was not overly sweetened, so all the flavors came through. And I wanted to also mention that the cinnamon that she was talking about in the horchata is actually canela, which is the Mexican cinnamon. It's also called soft stick cinnamon. And it's called soft stick because it's very easy to grind. I use it a lot.
Hmm.
We've talked about it before.
Yes, you know a lot more. You have introduced me to many cinnamons, and this is
wonderful. One is really my favorite. It doesn't have that distinct zingy heat of a you know, what is American cinnamon or even a Vietnamese cinnamon. The canela is more fruity. You don't immediately, oh, that's cinnamon. It is cinnamon, but it's a different sort, and I recommend using it in a lot of things. In fact, it was in that, remember we did the CCCC, chocolate chip.
Cardamom.
Ceylon cinnamon.
Cookies.
Ceylon cinnamon is also canela.
Ah.
Or soft stick. It's called those three things. Mm-hmm, so in Mexico, it is called canela, or in Southern California, we used to call it Mexican cinnamon.
Good.
So Cecilia's next dinner is June 24th, and she is making Aztec soup, chili rellenos, and agua de limón y chía, lemonade with soft chía drink, and a flan Neapolitano. So you have to understand, this is not a restaurant.
Yeah,
okay?
Tell me about this restaurant.
It's not a restaurant.
Oh, no. Okay.
It's in her home.
Oh, there you go.
And, of course, it has to be by invitation and just a donation because it's not a restaurant. It's not a commercial endeavor. It's a cultural pleasure endeavor, okay? So that's Cecilia Cabrera Hernandez. That's Cecilia dot Cabrerahdz at gmail.com. Go, Cecilia. It was delicious. And she and her husband are just delightful.
Oh, yay. So a bright spot in Jewel.
It was yum. Yum, yum, yum.
Yum, yum. You are listening to KHOI 89.1. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was a fine little tune played on a hammer dulcimer and actually some other things. There's a hammer dulcimer player called Ken Klodner, and he picked up that tune at a music festival, I believe in New Mexico. He found a mandolin player out there and another hammer dulcimer player, and there was an African man there that had a thumb piano, and they started jamming a little bit, and then they heard at this festival a traditional Native American tune, which this is. They played that tune on those instruments. The tune is called Purple Lilies. So there you have a very American tune. A Native American tune played on hammer dulcimer, mandolin, and thumb piano. Why not? Yes. So I've got a few short garden tips.
She's been doing some long gardening, I can tell you.
Yeah, well, look at my hands. They're full of dirt under the fingers.
Yeah, she's got a bit of color on her face.
Oh, I do. I'm out in the sunshine. I have two things about planting. A lot of people like to put themselves in a tomato this time of year. And we have had weather that is either dry, wet, dry, cold, warm.
It's been a bit insane. And now we're going to have wet, wet, wet for a whole week.
Well, I want to encourage you, when you transplant your little tomato plants outside, or even if you're going to put them in a bigger pot, make sure that the soil is ready for those roots. If it's really dry, water the ground first. That's either in your garden. It's really nice to water it first. Or in a pot, water it first. And don't just stick the tomato right in. Kind of let the water soak in. So it's not a puddle of water, but so the soil is damp. The tomato will appreciate that. And the transplant shock will be a lot less if your soil is welcoming. So water the soil first. And here is another tip.
Wait.
Yeah.
That reminds me of your tip for starting seeds, where you get the soil wet first, and then I started some sunflower seeds, Lana. I hope they don't die.
Good for you.
She's trying to teach me. I'm a little...
That it's a good hint. Yeah. Remember, these are amazing little things. Roots, seeds, put them in damp soil.
And the soil, I guess it's a bit spongy.
Yeah.
It really absorbs and...
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It knows how to take care of itself, but it's a lot better than putting roots or seeds into dry, dusty stuff and then smashing it with water, because seeds and roots need air. And if you smash it with a bunch of water, you will really drown them. So prepare the soil ahead of time. Make it damp. Make it welcoming. And here's another thing. If you are planting tomatoes can be planted deeper than you think. If the tomato has got like 3 or 4 sets of leaves on it, go ahead and plant it down. You can even bury the first few leaves. You don't pick them off.
You just...
I pick them off if they're sticking up out of the ground. But, yeah, you could bury them below the first one or two nodules You can't. Tomatoes will put out roots all along their stem.
Oh.
They're nice like that.
I'm always learning a lot from Lana about this.
Well,
I learn a lot.
I learn about cinnamon from you and all.
So once again, Lana, how many varieties of tomatoes are you doing this summer?
35, I think. That doesn't mean all of them are, I keep asking this because it's just astounding. Yeah, but that doesn't mean all of them are going to survive. I say, go for it, tomatoes, and I'll keep track of which ones do good and which ones don't. And
does that change every year because of the weather?
I've got, very much. Mm-hmm, I've got some favorites, and I always push the envelope and try some new ones. So we'll see what does this year. Tomatoes, do you have some new ones
with funny names or anything?
Oh, here's a funny one. Ava's Purple Ball.
Ava's Purple Ball.
Now, it's not purple. I don't know why. It's one of these old heirloom things. It's small. It is round. But it's kind of just a darkish red. It's not really purple. But he had to call it something, and Ava probably called it Purple Ball. So that's one of my funny named ones this year.
Dear, that sounds a bit obscene, doesn't it?
Donna, you would take it along that track.
Oh, dear.
Okay. Well,
pardon me.
All right. So good luck with your sticking of plants in the ground. Well, do you have some news for us, Donna? Some good news, some bad news? What's up, Donna?
Well, I have to start off by apologizing here. I had sort of created a whole bunch of sort of bummer political agricultural news.
Uh-huh.
But somehow we're having internet trouble in town, and I can't pull up the stories, and I was going to really quote from them, so I'm going to rely on memory for this, which means there may be some inaccuracies and some non-specifics where there should have been more details. So
if you want to disagree or respond, for goodness sakes, you can contact us here at the radio station KHOI.
Okay, but don't shoot the messenger.
No,
okay,
don't
please.
Shoot the messenger. This is a point of discussion.
Yeah.
So
these are subjects that I, you know, have followed for about 40 years, and I'm certainly not an expert, but I am a I have a rather rabid interest in these things. So this particular story that I wanted to start with, Pesticide Action Network, which is it's a national organization. They're quite active in Iowa. They released about 10 days ago a new study where they had actually gone around specifically in Iowa testing, I believe it was dusts and not food, but areas, surface areas for pesticide residue. The results were quite startling. The headline does read, "Children in farm communities pay a steep price for the food we eat." That's from Civil Eats. But it's resting on this Pesticide Action Network study showing, and with the article, they show a map basically of the U.S. with the areas of glyphosate spray. And, of course, we here in Iowa are in the thick of it. It's, you know, most of the Corn Belt is pretty densely sprayed with glyphosate.
You've referred to it as we are ground zero for this kind of stuff.
Yes, we are.
Folks.
You know, and folks, let's not stick our head in the sand about this anymore. It's of concern. It's in your neighborhood. It's in your house. It's in your, you know, it's certainly in the air. Certainly in the soil. Quite possibly, depending where you live, it could even be in the water. It's not something the USDA, I believe, or was it the EPA? One of them, maybe it must be the USDA, has said they are going to start testing for glyphosate residue, which means, of course, that they have not been testing for it. So, you know, we don't really know how bad it is because, of course, no one was willing to admit that it could be a problem.
But if we bring out all of these new wonder chemicals, and it would be nice to know what they're doing.
Because this got me going, and there's several things going on. First of all, the European Union is at a point in their legislative process about pesticides and GMOs. And it's like a little bully battleground of one person saying, oh, it's carcinogenic, and another one saying it's not. And, of course, there was a new assessment that, let's see, the UN, one aspect of the UN, one of them had said, okay, glyphosate is a probable carcinogen. Okay.
Yeah, I read that.
So Monsanto goes, no. Of course, Monsanto has a slightly vested interest. So what they did is they got a different branch of the UN to come out and say, no, glyphosate is definitely not carcinogenic. But the scuttlebutt on that story was that the science that produced the no, it's not carcinogenic, was rather flawed and heavily invested in by the proponents of glyphosate who are making a lot of money. Okay, folks, follow the dots here. What do you think? Okay, it's coming up bigger and louder and stronger.
Yes, I heard in the European Union, they're dealing with all this sort of thing. There was a major, how do they call that? Major urine samples were taken. Major tests on European pee.
They tested, actually, I believe, some legislators, and I've forgotten in which body they were. I mean, it was the bodies of the legislators that they tested. And, of course, they found out that they all have it in their pee, in the pee samples.
And the rest of their body, too.
Right, they all came back positive for glyphosate. Now, a further wrinkle in this is that, of course, in addition to glyphosate, there are other products that go into glyphosate that are listed as, the companies do not have to disclose them. It's part of their specific patented
trade secrets,
exactly. So it turns out that somebody, and I've forgotten since I can't read it off of my internet here, someone has reverse engineered some of those to find out really what they are. And it turns out that some of the things that are supposed to be inert actually are very, very detrimental. And and make the glyphosate, of course, absorbed more into the plant, but into the skin as well.
So not only is
the glyphosate nasty, but some of the other things in it are possibly even more difficult for human health.
It sounds very complicated.
And other living beings' health, as a matter of fact. It's very hard on the environmental, you know, all the little amphibians out there, and then we... And somewhere the bees come along, and somewhere the butterflies. It's complicated.
Right. So all of this stuff that we keep hearing is inert. It is ert.
Very ert. Yes, it's very.
Very ert.
Very, yes. So you know, we've been plugging along under these protected large corporations for a long, long time. Long enough that, you know, they have a history in our environment that's largely unexamined, I must say, by the people that we think should be protecting us. Mm-hmm. So there was a further article that I read, which was kind of interesting. And now, of course, I can't tell you who wrote it and what it said. But the gist of it was that when we, as consumers, ask that a chemical be banned, like BHA, the one that's in plasticizers.
That's in cows.
No.
BA, yep.
Is it? BPA. There. That one. Okay. So what happens is the consumers rise up and go, oh, no, this is toxic. We can't do it. So the chemical company says, oh my goodness, of course not. We'll make one that's BPH, BP, whatever it is, something free.
It's like something, They put another chemical in.
Right. They changed chemicals. Okay. Now, it will take a few years before we finally find out that, and it's not looking good, the science on the replacement chemical is also rather toxic.
But they can say it is dangerous chemical free, but not...
Well, because the new one hasn't been adequately tested. It's like, okay, we got rid of DDT, but we brought in some other ones. So what this article was saying is essentially, when the consumers and other appropriate people do a boycott or raise enough of a fuss that something is removed, that's no big deal for the chemical companies. They just come up with something else. And basically what this article was saying, you know what, that is not the solution. We just dig the hole deeper. Okay, you don't want that chemical? We'll give you another chemical. Essentially, they're replacing quite often because the chemists, they're working with the same molecules over and over in the same sort of ways that they work and the pathways and the, you know, and basically a lot of the pesticides and herbicides are based on endocrine disruption of pests and other things. And, of course, it's going to endocrine disrupt higher up the food chain.
We have those sort of things, too, that can be disrupted.
Yes, we do. And, for example, one element of glyphosate is actually, before it was put into that, I believe was used as some sort of antibiotic, which means it's actually killing a lot of soil microbes.
Yes, antibiotic, as in we kill biotics. Thank you.
Right, but it does not help our microbiome in the soil nor in the gut. And I'm sorry that I can't be more precise about this because I've lost my notes.
Well, it's always good to throw out a bunch of stuff out there because everybody, I'm sure everybody has access to computers and resources in Google and look this stuff up, folks.
Well, you know, it just calls into mind that, you know, maybe this better living through modern chemistry, not that we don't need chemistry, of course we do, and then there's natural chemistry too, but basing a lot of this on petrochemicals and biocides is maybe not such a good idea. There was another article by Francis Moore LaPay? Who is quite the vegan, and we don't always agree, she and I. But the article was a large percentage, the majority of farmers on the planet, which are mostly small farmers, use organic or there's another word for it, where they want to say, I don't know. And anyway, it's more, it's not sustainable. It's organic agriculture. Yes, it works. Yes, we can do without the pesticides. Yes, we can feed the planet. Of course, we have to distribute the food properly.
And work with the planet as opposed to against it. Yes. We've been warring against each other for a long time, and I'm afraid we turn around and war against the planet, too. We take, we rape, we pillage, we harvest and harvest and harvest and kill and kill.
Well, really, we've been mining the soil here in Iowa because we have really, really good soil. But, you know, we could lose that over a generation or two. I mean, our soil losses are pretty substantial. There are lots of things, very positive things that can be done about it. You know, cover crops and more natural forms of fertilizer, like from animals.
Yeah.
We can change this agricultural equation, and it will work, contrary to the proclamations of the agribusinesses who would like to make a lot of money off of all of us, off of the farmers. That reminds me, did you see that there was a man in a farming magazine who's a cartoonist? This was a couple of weeks ago, and he did a cartoon of two farmers leaning over the fence, and one of them saying, you know, by gosh, who says there's no money to be made in farming? Look at how much those executives of Monsanto make. Do you know that man lost the job? He lost his job over that cartoon?
You're kidding.
No. Ridiculous, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Ha, 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 ha.
Gee.
Who's afraid of the big bad wolf?
Go for it. Editorial cartoons are made to hit truth, and so that's pretty good. And all you folks that are not farmers, you are eaters. Everybody is part of this food system.
Yeah, and all of this food system, you know, we take it into the sanctity of our own body. So really a little bit of consciousness is very appropriate.
And as Wendell Berry says, eating is an agricultural act. We're all in this together.
And as Donna transliterates that, eating is an environmental activity.
There you go. This is KHOI Radio 89.1, Story City Ames. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is community radio. You can respond to the Donna Lana Kitchen here. We don't just want to talk in a vacuum. We'd love to hear from you. Contact us. What's on your plate? What's on your mind? KHOIRadio@gmail.com. And put Donna Lana Kitchen in the headline up there so we can find you. And also, Kate, you can find more about this show and lots of other great shows on this community radio station at khoifm.org. You can stream. You can download. You can go to the Donna Lana Kitchen archives, find past shows if you can't get enough of us. There's recipes there. There's a picture of us. Yes, we'll have a bit more music here. This is a little bit of music from the French-Canadian end of our border.
We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was music by Elka Baker and Ken Kolodner. A little bit of music sort of with a French-Canadian bent. They play a lot of different stuff there. So, this is May. The gardens are starting to explode. You can find lots of interesting, good things at your farmer's market.
I hope you're all eating a lot of asparagus while we got it.
Oh, I don't grow asparagus because, I don't know, I just don't fuss over it like it should be
fussed
over.
Is it fussy? I think it...
Well, once you establish it, it's okay.
I always think of it as, you just go out there and cut it.
Yeah, that's
true.
Because
it comes back and it comes back and it comes back.
So many people do it better than I... Same with strawberries. I let somebody else grow them in quantity and let somebody else grow the asparagus in quantity.
But Lana's the tomato person.
So I grow tomatoes in quantity. You grow what you love and it works out good that way.
There must be just different personalities. I, for example, do not grow tomatoes. I never get anything but leaves.
Well, Donna, you have a shady yard, and people come up to me and ask for tomato advice, and they say, oh, all I have is trees. I have no sun in my yard, but I want to grow tomatoes. And I say, you are out of luck. Tomatoes need sun. They are a hot weather thing. They love the summer sun. Set those roots deep and reach for the sun. And they do need lots of sun to ripen those big, fat tomatoes. So there you go.
Well, I guess all my sunny spots are filled with herbs. I have my priorities.
One does. But there's lots of things available at farmer's market. And I did a kind of a good salad the other day. I found some, I don't remember from who, but I did buy some beets, which is probably...
Bruce.
Yeah, from somebody at farmer's market, and they were good. Now, I had the good luck of... In backyards all over central Iowa, pizza ovens are going up. Husbands and grandpas are getting together.
It's replacing grills for the outdoor cooking area.
They read something on the internet and say, I can build a pizza oven. And there are all kinds of pizza ovens are going
up. And Lana's husband, Joe, has one, and we have great fun with it, I must say.
It's a lot of fun. There's a lot
it looks like he's constantly re-engineering the damn thing, right?
Yeah. Of course. That's part of the deal. People like
tinkering.
To do that. Yeah. Get the heat up. Watch the smoke go different directions. So I hope people are enjoying their pizza ovens out here. And I mentioned that because that's how I roasted those beets. After you get done making your pizza, you have got a nice warm oven that is cooling down. You can put some bread in there if you want, or put in a bit of dessert, a little pie or a galette or something.
You know, Lana has a very good pizza crust recipe.
Oh.
Which also can be done in an oven at home, too.
Right.
I think maybe you should talk about your recipe and then post it.
I will, but I can't think of it over the top of my head right now.
All right.
Let's do pizza crust recipe
next week. Okay.
I will make a note. Okay.
Look forward to this, folks. We've had some, you know, because you can put whatever topping you wanted, even if it's just like you had some dough left over last time and you made these little flat little loaves and just put salt on it.
Salt and olive oil.
Yummy.
Yeah, anyway.
Yummy.
Those pizza ovens, they're just good. I hope everybody's enjoying theirs. But back to what I did with those beets. Put those beets in there. I actually left them overnight. Not on the coals, but... And they were roasted beautifully.
Right. This is a wood-fired pizza oven.
I had a couple beets in the refrigerator. So I took those beets, slipped the skin off. I chopped up some sorrel, which is a wonderful herb this time of year. It's a very lemony, big-leafed sort of thing that's coming up in the garden.
Even I have sorrel in my
garden.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get it. And I added sorrel. Lots of chive blossoms this time of year. The top of chives are coming up with these purple poofs. And use those blossoms this time of year before they go to seed. They're wonderfully subtle and green.
They're tender. They're delicious.
Wonderful.
And they're very pretty.
Very pretty. And I marinated all that stuff with orange juice, a dash of balsamic vinegar, some salt and pepper, stirred that around for a while, let it sit. I sat for about an hour while I was doing other things. And then it was a pretty good supper.
You know, Lana, this is the thing about beets, especially red beets. Of course, I love yellow beets because they don't do this. But red beets, of course, will make everything magenta. Sometimes if I want to... salad like that, where you want your beets to sit and marinate, mm-hmm. I will leave out, like I might leave the chive blossoms out until just before I serve. So the beets are marinating and juicing up and turning everything. And then just when I serve it, I will put the chive blossoms or some other, whatever the other ingredients are, on quickly. So that everything doesn't turn purple, and then you have a little bit of color in the magenta.
There you have it. Good word from a chef. I just kind of mushed. It was a really tasty mush, but that would be
much prettier.
Yeah, Thank you,
Donna.
That
is the problem with beets. It turns everything
beetish,
monocolored. Yes.
Yeah. Well, so I have a little upcoming event here. The Central Iowa Barn Dance is having a dance this Saturday evening at 8 o'clock. Go to cibd.org, centraliowabarndance.org. The Barn Owl Band with Roger Alexander Calling is happening this Saturday. Well, you've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Today we talked about Cecilia's Table, a fine place to eat and have a Mexican dinner in Jewel. And give us that
oh boy, again, it's Cecilia, Cecilia dot Cabrera, CABREREHDZ, that's for Hernandez, at gmail.com.
And find out a lot more. So support local food, support local farms, local cooks, and this fine local community radio station, KHOIFM.org, to find more. You've been listening to the music of Ken Kolodner and Elka Baker. We'll go out with a tune called The Orange Rogue, a little Irish music here to go out. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've had fine engineering by Jasmine Reguera. Eat good food and enjoy life.